Good morning and welcome to the Albany Report. I'm your host, former State Senator Cecilia Kacik. I hope everyone had a great weekend, and it's great to see things growing, and like spring, hope springs eternal. And we have a lot planned for today's show and a great guest coming on later. I'll be joined by Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause. But before we get to Susan, I have an interview that was recorded last Wednesday with State Senator Daniel Squadron, who talked about new leadership in the Senate and the atmosphere in Albany, and who is also the sponsor of S-60, legislation to close the LLC loophole. We'll get to that interview in just a few minutes. We have corrosive corruption in our state capitol. Those were the words U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara used to describe Albany's pay-to-play culture. He was speaking over the weekend at Pace Law School's graduation, and it's resulted in chaos at the Capitol. Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos resigned his position last Monday, a week after the U.S. Attorney arrested him and his son Adam Skelos on corruption charges. The U.S. Attorney charged both Skelos and his son with using Skelos' office to extort payments. Skelos and his son both claim they are innocent of the charges. Skelos, who is keeping his legislative seat, is the sixth legislative leader to face criminal charges or scandal in Albany since 2008. John Flanagan, a senator from Suffolk County and Long Island, is the new majority leader, beating out Senator John DeFrancisco of Syracuse for the spot in a very close vote. The new majority leader received votes from several upstate senators. He's only been in the leadership position for 1 week, but has already put together a list of priorities for the remainder of the legislative session, which ends on June 17th. What does he want to see get done? Make the property tax cap permanent. The property tax cap expires June 1st, 2016. He also wants to see enactment of the controversial education investment tax credit and increasing the charter school cap. Not surprising, the Senate wants to reform the education provisions that were just enacted in the state budget. They want to see reforms to the statute authorizing mayoral control of New York City schools. And he wants to root out campus sexual assault on all college campuses. And he adds they want to make in the Senate common sense reforms to the SAFE Act. Also included in the priority list was legislation to make sure New York City police and firefighters injured in the line of duty receive appropriate financial protection. Surprisingly, nothing on his list about ethics reform. Millions of dollars in contributions by New York State real estate interests, mainly funneled through LLCs, have been cited in the cases against former Speaker of the Assembly Sheldon Silver, who resigned his leadership post in January, and former Majority Leader Dean Skelos. Both received large amounts of contributions from Glenwood Management, a New York City real estate firm headed by Leonard Litwin. The complaint against Skelos alleges that he used his influence to pressure Glenwood Management executive to arrange payments for his son. The largest beneficiary of the LLC loophole, let's not forget, is Governor Andrew Cuomo, who received $1 million from limited liabilities companies tied to Glenwood Management. Legislation that would change campaign finance law and close the LLC loophole made progress this past week. It passed in the Assembly, but appears stalled in the Senate. The measure would treat limited liability companies like other companies or corporations when it comes to campaign finance laws. Now they're treated like individuals, allowing LLCs to donate up to $150,000 without identifying actual donors. The push to get the bill on the floor in the Senate continues. I interviewed the primary sponsor of the legislation in the Senate, Senator Daniel Squadron, last Wednesday, just before a Senate committee meeting where the legislation now resides. Here's our conversation with State Senator Daniel Squadron about how his bill is doing in the New York State Senate. Just give us a minute to get the interview up. I'm getting help from Neva here in the studio. And we will We'll come back with the interview right after this break. Now we'll hear from State Senator Daniel Squadron in our interview that was taped last Wednesday.
A guest with me this morning, State Senator Daniel Squadron. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you again.
It's great to be here. We're taping in the Capitol because when my show is airing on Monday mornings, you're actually driving up to Albany.
I'm from Brooklyn. I represent Brooklyn and Lower Manhattan. And like you, I'm raising a family while doing public service, and so I try to see my kids on Monday mornings before I leave.
So we are recording you today because we wanted to talk about a couple things. There's been a change in leadership in the New York State Senate, and last week you were the senator that put a resolution on the floor asking for a leadership vote. Why did you do that?
It really looked as though there was going to be an attempt to have Senator Skelos, who's been charged with serious federal crimes, continue as temporary president of the Senate. Now, I'm sure your listeners know this, but it bears repeating. The way that the legislature is structured, in the Senate especially, the temporary president has enormous, near absolute power. In fact, in the complaint against Senator Skelos, he describes it. He has power over appointing committees, which bills can get voted on or not, the entire budget process. Look, there's no question that in court, folks are and must be innocent until proven guilty. That's really unrelated to the question as to whether someone who's charged with a serious crime should be given that kind of absolute power in one of the two houses of the state legislature. I don't think they should. It's the reason I brought the motion. Unfortunately, the ugliest parliamentary procedure I've ever seen was done to create, rather than rule of the majority, which is necessary, but tyranny of the presiding officer. Luckily, with our pressure and a lot of other pressure, Senator Skelos has now resigned.
So that was last Wednesday that you brought the resolution to the floor, and the president who was presiding rejected it, said it had to be in writing, and you were prepared to present it again on Monday, but instead there was a leadership vote on the floor of the Senate. So it sounds like made a change. Are you happy with the change and what happened yesterday?
Look, there's nothing about what's happening in Albany today that should make me or any New Yorker happy. It was the right thing to do. The fact that there's even a question in the state legislature as to whether someone charged with a serious federal crime should be in a leadership position is the opposite of happy. It's very disappointing. I do hope that the new leader, Senator Flanagan, who I certainly wish all the best to and hope can get things done because of what we need to do in the state, I do hope that he doesn't do more of the same old, same old. If there's one lesson from what we've seen over the last 5, 7, 9 years, it's that there's a fundamental change that's needed here. And it's not just a couple of changes in the ethics laws that I've been proud to pass and support ethics laws to strengthen our oversight. It's not just who's sitting in the chair of leader. It's the way the entire place runs. And I really hope, now Leader Flanagan takes that on.
And what do you think needs to change?
Well, some of the things are clear. In fact, later today, I'm going to be going to a committee that's supposed to be looking at my bill to close the so-called LLC loophole. Now, this is something that you are acutely and painfully aware of.
Yes, we have been following this bill on our show. And it went through Elections Committee, and it was, I would call it, punted to Corporations Committee. And tell us why it's important to have this loophole closed.
Right. Well, the LLC loophole essentially allows unlimited shadowy dollars to overwhelm our entire political process. individuals can start unlimited number of limited liability companies. Each limited liability company can contribute as if it itself is an individual. And there's essentially no way to track the source of that money back to where it really comes from.
And a big part of the corruption charges that were levied against former Speaker of the Assembly, Sheldon Silver, and now former Majority Leader, Dean Skelos, came from their relationship with Glenwood Management and its use of the LLC loophole to funnel hundreds of thousands of dollars. What does closing the LLC loophole actually do?
As with the closing the LLC loophole does, there's actually a couple of ways to do it. The bill that should be getting a vote in the Corporations Committee, but sadly I think is unlikely to get such a vote, would treat LLCs like corporations, which, you know, for many instances, they are. There's other ways to do it. You could treat LLCs like partnerships, which are also dealt with and regulated under campaign finance law. You could let the LLC itself, as the Democratic commissioners of the Board of Elections recommended, choose which they are. The problem is that right now the LLC is truly in a loophole. It is a loophole that is taking over, overwhelming the rest of the system. And here are the key things you need. You need transparency. Where is the money coming from? That's not a Democratic idea. The Supreme Court, which opened the Citizens United major loophole, said even in that decision that transparency is a necessity. That's something that should be a consensus.
You should know who's giving you the money.
You should know.
Public should know who's funneling $50,000 or $100,000 to your campaign. Who's doing that?
Exactly. And in fact, even the farthest right wing of the Supreme Court justices, I just about agree with that. The second is something that's a near consensus, which is there should be some limits on giving. No single individual or entity should be able to directly sit in a room with an elected official and say, here's a blank check, or a potential elected official. Those are the two ideas. There's nothing here that is controversial in the light of day. Unfortunately, in Albany, what is obvious in the light of day often loses the argument in the shadows of the rooms where decisions are made. And that's what we're seeing with this.
And I know good government groups are behind this. And there was a push initially at the Board of Elections to get them to overturn this loophole that they actually created in 1996 by saying we're following the FEC and it says treat them as individuals.
So you ready for a little Kafka here?
Yes.
So the Republicans in the Senate block closure of the LLC loophole in the budget. The Board of Elections then took up closure of the loophole. The Republican commissioners of the Board of Elections said they weren't going to close it because it was properly the role of the legislature, brought it back to the legislature, where the Elections Committee, run by Senate Republicans, every Senate Republican declined to take a position on it one way or the other and punted it into the dark room of the Corporations Committee. This is something you need a chart for your listeners at home. I wish this were a video, although the truth is, even a chart would get so labyrinthine and maze-like. Here's what we know. Everything possible is being done to ensure that this loophole stays open, because the kind of money that comes in is a big part of what fuels Albany. As you point out, we've seen a complaint after complaint. It is not the cause of some of these charges, but it relates to them every time. The absolute power or near absolute power imbued in the leader of the Senate, the unlimited, untransparent dollars that come from the LLC loophole, the idea that somehow what we've been doing is good enough and a fig leaf will be enough to make the public go away. Those three things together are what need to change if we're going to have a state government that people can have faith in.
Well, hopefully the new leader will open up the process, as he says, create more transparency, and allow this bill to go through corporations and get to the floor. Do you think it would pass if it got to the floor?
You know, this is an issue. It's very hard to defend opposition in the light of day. And we saw that even in the Elections Committee. It's hard for me to believe that you'll have a partisan line vote in this environment to support keeping this loophole open.
What's happening in the Assembly with this bill?
Well, the Assembly has done great. Brian Kavanaugh is the sponsor. Another colleague of mine, Joanne Simon, has also been pushing it. And Speaker Hastie has been supportive of it. It's sort of on deck to be passed this week in the Assembly, which is very exciting news. And, you know, and a big deal to show commitment to change over there.
And the governor has said he would sign it. I would like to see it pass.
The governor has said that. He put it in his budget. Which is all good news. This is, unfortunately, this shouldn't be a partisan fight. I'm certainly not looking for a partisan fight. Unfortunately, over the last 8 weeks or so, That's what it's turned into. And it's very disappointing.
Have there been any Republican senators that have joined on as co-sponsors on your bill?
No. One or two have actually been willing to stand up on the floor of the Senate and say they're against closing the loophole, to everyone's shock. But for the most part, what you saw in the Elections Committee, which was a lot of senators basically voting pass, is what you've seen. I guess it's better than a no, only if it gets to the floor and turns into a yes.
And what has the response been from Senator Ranzenhofer on putting it on the agenda?
Stay tuned. I hope you watch the... we will know by the time your listeners listen to this. And I hope you have some clips from the very exciting Corporations Committee at 1:30. Come back. I haven't yet experienced it, but you will know exactly what happened by the time this airs.
Excellent. We will follow what happens in the Corporations Committee.
Thank you. It's great to see you, and it was great to serve with you. I think your listeners probably know this, but people who are in this for the right reason and are willing to just work like crazy for their constituents and for the state are all too rare here, and you have been and continue to be that, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Senator, for doing what you're doing and continuing to do.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on the show.
And that was State Senator Daniel Squadron, and we pre-recorded that last Wednesday. And later that day, the Corporations Committee did meet, and we have a clip from that exchange where Senator Squadron requested that his bill to close the LLC loophole get on the committee agenda. So let's listen to a few minutes from the Corporations Committee and hear what happened.
As you well know, the vast majority of bills in the Corporations Committee, the vast, vast majority, come to the Corporations Committee after they are introduced in this House. The idea of a bill being referred here as a committee of secondary reference is not unheard of, but it's rare. And for it to be referred here pursuant to a motion for committee consideration serves as a request out by any measure. Now, certainly after the letter that I sent yesterday and this conversation, there can be no doubt about my interest in this bill being heard, as I think there can be no doubt based on debates around the budget and the fact the LLC loophole was left open by the final budget and other things. So pursuant to Rule 8, Section 3E, and now this conversation and my letter of yesterday, I do just want to confirm that the Corporations Committee will be meeting again and that this bill will get a hearing.
Yeah, just two things again. Number one, when I get a bill in my committee, as I said, I just got it yesterday. I never got your request indicating any interest, and I'm going to let counsel address your issue with respect to the rules. I certainly respect your opinion. I think you're wrong, but I'm going to have counsel address that.
Yes, Senator. Under your reading of Rule 8E, if you go to the last line, which I believe is what you referenced in your letter, you say, in the case of a bill that is referred to a standing committee having secondary reference, the interpretation of us, and it's a consistent interpretation, is that that applies to the committee that you made the motion to. So it would be the Elections Committee. So when the Elections Committee decided to have a secondary reference as corporations on your bill at 60, the interpretation of us is that it had to be considered within two meetings at the Elections Committee. And that is a consistent interpretation of 8E since it's been around in 2009. Oh, sorry, 3E.
Rule 8, 3E.
Yes.
Let me ask a number of questions on that.
Sure.
In a world in which, in 2009, there were an unlimited number of these motions. Mm-hmm. Today, there are three per member. Today, and I think this calendar has been largely consistent, though not identical, it takes 45 days within a committee for a request out to be right, and a bill must have been in a committee for 45 days before such request can be made or must have been submitted. So based on a six-month legislative calendar, is it the reading of counsel and of the majority that any committee of secondary reference is tantamount to bottling the bill up and that there is no recourse under the rules to require a vote once the committee of secondary reference happens?
I don't think I would necessarily take that view. Their proper recourse is making a motion to this committee,
committee
consideration, and then it would be ripe within 45 days.
Okay, so just briefly, what is 45 days from April 27th?
without a calendar in front of me?
Hold on a second. I mean, that's a rhetorical question.
It's not a rhetorical question.
You don't know. You can look it up, and he can look it up. So
okay, suffice to say it's June.
Okay.
Okay. What is the date at which motions for committee consideration are no longer in order in this House?
I believe it's the first Monday in May.
Okay. Let me ask the question again. Mm-hmm. It is the majority's contention that moving a bill to a committee of secondary reference makes it impossible to compel a vote in that committee by a motion for committee consideration. Isn't that the fact?
I guess that's your interpretation of what I'm saying.
I'm sorry. I don't think it's fair to call something my interpretation when it is a fact on the calendar. This is easily solved without all of the math reference to rules. If this committee on an issue of this level of importance and the chair is willing to put this bill on a committee meeting, as I believe the rules clearly state, because the rules are by any measure absurd under any other reading, as we just began to get into.
Why don't we do this, Senator? As I said, I got your letter today, okay? I've not, I did read your letter, but we've had a busy day the last couple of days, so I've not really had an opportunity to digest the letter of the dozens of letters that I got today. So why don't we do this? Why don't you let me actually take a look at your letter? I've heard the differing interpretations of the rule. I know you'd like to have it considered. So let me take a look at it, and I will make a decision whether or not it should be on the calendar or not be on the calendar. But I just got it today. So let me take a look at it. Okay. Fair enough?
All right.
And that was the conversation at the Senate Standing Committee on Corporations regarding S-60, the bill that would close the LLC loophole. And just as an aside, Committee Chairman Ranzenhofer also later said that before this bill came up, they were not planning any further committee meetings in this legislative session. And just to remind our listeners, this bill started out in the Elections Committee, where it actually belonged. Members of the minority can only put forth three, what they call recommendations for committee consideration, a session. So Senator Squadron chose to put his bill on the committee agenda. Essentially, it's to allow the minority a way to force a vote on one of their pieces of legislation. Instead of allowing a vote, the Elections Committee essentially punted. They all did aye without rec or didn't vote and sent it to the Corporations Committee, where it seems to be bottled up. And as you heard, the machinations essentially are making it impossible for Senator Squadron to get a vote on his bill in the committee level. So we'll continue to follow this and talk with Susan Lerner from Common Cause after a short break to see where does this bill go from here. You're listening to the Albany Report, and we'll be right back.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. It
And we're back on the Albany Report. I'm your host, Cecilia Kachik, and joining me via Skype is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause. Susan, welcome to the Albany Report.
Thanks for having me back, Cece.
It's great to have you on. And I got to say, it's quite confusing in Albany, and I'm hoping you can help us sift through what's going on. And and I know you've been listening to the radio show. I had an interview with Daniel Squadron, the senator who's pushing closure of the LLC loophole. We spoke last Wednesday. The Corporations Committee met later that day, and essentially it sounds like they're refusing to allow his bill to get through their committee, even though it started in the Elections Committee. Where do we go from here on this issue, which seems so important to cleaning up Albany and reducing the impact of our pay-to-play culture?
Well, I think that we need to ramp up the pressure. I was very glad to hear that you were talking about this issue in your radio show. I think that we need to get the story out of Albany. We've been talking to our members, Common Cause members, in Senator Ranzenhofer's district, in Senator Flanagan's district. We have members throughout the state. We've been in communication with them. They are pretty outraged at what is happening because it's clear that the Senate majority will do anything possible to keep this question from actually being debated and getting a vote. And that's because it is an unbelievable money spigot for these people. It's, you know, we released an analysis of just the campaign contributions from Glenwood Management's LLCs. Glenwood is the New York City real estate developer who are front and center in both the federal corruption complaint against Shelley Silver, the former assembly speaker, and front and center in the federal corruptions complaint against Senator Skelos, now the former majority leader of the Senate. And what we found is that both Skelos and Senator Ranzenhofer, among others, took substantial money from just Glenwood's LLCs. We haven't even done any research to see what the situation is with other LLCs controlled by other real estate corporations. Mm. But, you know, Senator Ranzenhofer, in the space of less than 10 years, took over $100,000 from Glenwood in contributions to him through LLCs. Almost 94% of that money came through Glenwood Limited Liability Companies. Mm-hmm. Senator Skelos has taken a similar amount of money. LLCs provided, again, over $100,000 to him, and only 5% of those contributions were made directly by Glenwood Management or associated individuals. So the big money that is pouring out of the New York City real estate industry to ensure that Albany continues to provide outrageous New York City tax breaks to real estate developers of luxury condominiums here, mm-hmm. and that Albany continues to weaken New York City's essential rent stabilization laws. So it's an unholy alliance between out of New York City legislators, primarily, unfortunately, it seems, Republican state senators, and the New York City real estate industry, who for legitimate business purposes has a whole file cabinet worth of LLCs that they can use around our already sky-high contribution limits.
Well, this seems to be a loophole made for the real estate industry. Folks should know that the real estate industry utilizes LLCs, limited liability corporations, to structure their buildings. So if you own multiple buildings, each one is structured as a separate entity, an LLC. So you already have, as you said, a file cabinet of LLCs to funnel money through. And if one individual LLC reaches a limit of $150,000, you just go to another LLC or create a new one. So it creates an unlimited way for people in the real estate industry to funnel money to, I would say, curry favor for legislators who are voting on local rent laws and tax abatements that affect their business in New York City. What I find is ironic is that the legislators they often have the closest relationship to don't represent their interests in New York City. They're from upstate, as you just described.
Well, because that's pretty simple and straightforward. If the real estate industry were to give substantial dollars to New York-based legislators, the constituents of those legislators would hold them accountable, because what the New York City real estate developers do in New York City has a direct impact on New York City constituents. But if you are a legislator from Long Island, or you are a legislator from the suburbs of Buffalo or Rochester, your constituents don't care.
And where does Senator Ranzenhofer, where is his district?
He is outside of Buffalo.
Not too many rent-stabilized or rent-controlled apartments out there.
No, and so there is absolutely no downside to him, as far as his constituents are concerned, for taking this amount of money. They're concerned with other issues. So it's a win-win for the real estate industry, and it's a win-win for the senator, and it is a major problem for public policy. And the big loser is the New York City taxpayer, because it's the New York City tax base which is significantly eroded. So I would go further. It's not just currying favor, frankly. It is doing everything possible to buy public policy. And so far, it's been quite successful. You have to ask yourself, why are important public policy initiatives like tax abatements for affordable housing in New York City, rent stabilization and other important regulations, why are they only for 4 years?
Hmm.
Well, if they weren't for 4 years, then the real estate industry wouldn't have as much of an incentive to keep giving large amounts of money.
Because every time they're up for renegotiation or approval, it's an opportunity to get more funding flowing through these LLC loopholes into campaigns.
That's exactly right. So there is no incentive, naturally, for the Republican state Senate to take up the LLC loophole. So we need to really be intensifying the pressure.
I know you were there the day of the leadership vote behind closed doors in the Republican
yes.
Senate. I know there is a number of organizations like Common Cause raising attention to this. What was the reaction that you got on that day?
You know, the press listened carefully, took a lot of notes, and when Senator Flanagan was chosen as the new Republican leader and came out to answer questions, I'm happy to say that the press did pick up on the topic of our press conference and started asking questions.
Mm.
You know, what is your position regarding closing the LLC loophole? Are you going to pick up ethics and campaign finance reforms? There's been, you know, there's such an atmosphere and questions about how business is done. And he basically just punted on everything. And subsequently, the current three men in a room, because the two of them are new, as you know, the current three men in a room have basically said, oh, we don't see the need to revisit ethics and campaign finance reform. We did something in the budget, which frankly, all of the good government groups feel was very weak beer and not what everything far from what was needed. And therefore, we have other more important things like continuing tax breaks for real estate developers in New York City that we have to take up. So I think the only thing that is going to swing this is public pressure, which is one of the reasons why we have been circulating a petition to the state senators to close the LLC loophole. We're hoping to get over 2,000 names, and we hope that some of your listeners will go on our website, commoncause.org/NY, and sign the petition, which we are going to deliver either later this week or next week to Senator Flanagan and Senator Ranzenhofer.
Well, there are only 15 days on the calendar where the Senate and Assembly are actually in session. session ends June 17th, I believe. So yeah, there's not a lot of time left. But the Assembly has passed the legislation. They passed it last week with a bipartisan support of 120-8. The governor, even though the governor is the one, I believe, the largest benefactor of money from Glenwood Management, has said he would sign the LLC loophole. He included initially in his budget closing the LLC loophole, but that fell out of negotiations. And it sounds like the Senate Republicans were the ones that kicked that off the table and now continue to not allow the bill to come to the floor. So it can get to, how does it get to the Senate floor at this stage?
Well, you know, there are, as you know, so many parliamentary maneuvers that allow the leadership to bring things forward that they want to have voted out before the end of the session. There's no real impediment to moving the LLC loophole bill through the committees, through rules, and onto the floor if the leadership wants that to happen. They could do it now. They could do it at the 11th hour. Mm-hmm. But I also think, Cece, that it's important for your listeners to know that it's more than just the governor has said he will sign it. What's important and what is still to be seen is whether the governor is actually going to put any credibility and his weight behind getting it done.
He hasn't said much about the latest scandal. I mean, we've seen those three men in a room, two of them have now changed because they've been arrested on corruption and bribery charges.
Yeah.
Stemming from the use of money flowing to political campaigns through this LLC loophole. He really didn't have much to say. I think all he said was, if the charges were true, they're quite shocking.
Right.
I mean, what's shocking is if found guilty, these two men maybe end up behind bars for using their political office to benefit themselves.
Right. To enrich themselves in the most classic kind of corruption. But let's remember, Cece, unfortunately, the governor is the most major beneficiary of the LLC loophole. He collects as much as $1 million from just one real estate developer through the LLC loophole.
And that's Glenwood Management.
And that's Glenwood again. They're at the center of everything. They are big, big spenders. You know, to his credit, he has taken the public position that the LLC loophole should be closed. But we need to see him take a much more active role between now and June 17th and make it clear that other things that the legislature wants are not going to move forward without significant reform. Closing the LLC loophole, public financing of elections, following the Moreland Commission roadmap. And we need the governor to get involved. And in fact, several good government groups on Friday sent a letter to the governor asking him exactly that. The letter's going to be released later today.
Okay.
The governor and the legislative leaders, where we said it's simply not acceptable to pretend that this problem has been addressed.
Well,
it's time for them to get real and make something significant happen.
There was a leadership meeting late last week, and the governor met with the new speaker in the assembly, Carl Hastie, and the new majority leader, John Flanagan. And after the meeting, Senator Jeff Klein was also in the room. After the meeting, they were asked by the reporters what they talked about and did ethics come up, and they said, no, we didn't talk about ethics. They're clearly not interested in the leadership level, and there's Governor Cuomo should be putting it on the table. Let's get this done. Instead, they're not interested in moving in that direction, because I think, as you've said, they benefit much too greatly by the LLC loophole itself.
So we are the ones who have to hold them accountable, Cece. It's pretty clear they're not going to do this of their own initiative. And when they do something, it is full of loopholes like Swiss cheese, which is the problem with what was passed through the budget. So it's got to be constituents and voters who say to these guys when they come home from Albany, seriously, this is the best you can do, we're underimpressed. You know, you say you're honest, but, you know, the guys who are arrested are the only ones. Something's wrong here. You know, it smells. Make it better.
Well, remember the governor did set up the Moreland Commission, and you mentioned that the Moreland Commission had a roadmap, and the governor closed or shut down the Moreland Commission after a year it was up and running. And I think they were really spent a lot of time and a lot of energy really trying to understand our campaign finance system and putting in place some recommendations on how to fix things so that government would function better. That seemed to be their purpose. Can you just go over the Moreland Commission's recommendations they made before they were shut down?
Sure. The Moreland Commission basically made recommendations in three general areas. The first was campaign finance and ethics reform, really campaign finance, I would say, more than anything else. Closing the LLC loophole, providing public funding of elections, ensuring that money raised for campaign purposes was spent only for campaign purposes, much better, clearer disclosures of independent expenditures, these large amounts of money now coming into our races, which, you know, you are painfully aware of. Because of the $6 million spent mostly in outside money in your past Senate race.
That's correct.
So they really focused. So first and foremost, let's clean up this, you know, huge money pool that we are allowing our state legislators, our state officials to swim in Albany, so that there's less temptation and things are clearer and cleaner and it's a different atmosphere. Second, they recommended a truly independent enforcement of campaign finance and ethics rules. Right now, what we have is absolutely not independent to speak of at all. Very captured, very weak watchdogs. So that was factor number two. And then third, they had a list of specific changes which they were recommending to criminal law to make it clear, for instance, that if you are a state legislator involved in self-dealing, that is actually a violation of our criminal law, clarifying and strengthening our bribery statutes, giving prosecutors tools that they would be able to use to actually clamp down on this corruption. At the state level, so that we would no longer be as dependent on the U.S. attorneys to be the enforcers of good ethics and morality in Albany. It's a pretty strong package. It's a pretty clear roadmap. We don't really have to sit and scratch our heads. Oh, gee, what should we do? A bipartisan, impressive panel made up of legal scholars, activists, and a significant number of district attorneys from across the state have given us a roadmap. That's what should be followed.
And what progress has actually been made in implementing that roadmap? I mean, the governor talked about we've got the strongest ethics in the country after the budget agreement. But really, what progress has been made on that roadmap that you say hasn't been sufficient?
There's been some strengthening of and clarification of what you can or cannot spend your campaign dollars on. There's been
you can't
some,
use it at a country club anymore.
That's right, which not too many people were doing. So it's and
but
our
you can still use it for your legal defense.
That's right, and you can still use it to lease a car if you have a self. If you can convince yourself that that's related to your office. And, you know, most of what was put into the statute is already the subject of advisory opinion, so we don't feel like a lot was clarified. There are some expansions and requirements now of better disclosures of outside income on the part of legislators. However, there are some amazing loopholes that grandfather in a lot of clients. So we're waiting to see how much actually gets disclosed to the public. And in a prior budget, a enforcement counsel's office was created in the Board of Elections, but that council isn't really independent. They can't do anything without the approval of the Board of Elections. And as you and Dan Squadron pointed out, the Board of Elections is set up to deadlock and not allow anything to happen. So what we've seen is a lot of, I would say, hand-waving and some nibbling around the edges, but no real effort to make a significant change the way scandals in New York City made significant changes, the way scandals in Connecticut made significant changes in both ethics and campaign finance law. It's just not happening here because I believe the state senators think that whatever happens in Albany stays in Albany. So we've got to make it absolutely clear that that's not the case and that they have to answer in their districts to their willingness to simply allow the corruption to continue.
Well, it's interesting because the Assembly obviously learned from this corruption scandal and leadership change, and they made some in-house improvements in how they track per diems, for example, and they actually passed the LLC loophole closure bill with bipartisan support, 120-8. So, they've clearly benefited from this loophole as well. One of the comments that bill sponsor of the Assembly, Assemblymember Kavanaugh, said when it passed is this: "The LLC loophole is perhaps the most egregious weakness in our laws regulating money in politics. It has been the mechanism of choice for certain people to attempt to buy influence wholesale by giving virtually unlimited amounts of money to politicians' campaign committees. I hope the Senate will join us in enacting this by passing Senator Daniel Squadron's companion bill."
So now, I think really significant thing is that it passed on a bipartisan basis. That is a clear signal to the Senate Republicans that they are going to stand very alone and very exposed if they continue to block progress in closing this loophole.
So what does your petition actually call for? What's it say?
Our petition calls for passing the bills, the bill that closes the LLC loophole. It's just straightforward. Close the LLC loophole, close it now.
And people can read about your petition and learn more about your organization and other groups that are involved in this by going to your website, which is what again?
It is commoncause.org/NY. And you will be able to sign the petition. You'll be able to learn about our other activities trying to deal with this ethics challenge that our state has and opportunities to get involved.
Well, I certainly hope that people pay attention to this issue. Now, we only have 15 days left in the session. Do you see this as an issue? I don't, since there's a lot of horse trading that happens at the end of session. The rent laws do expire June 15th. That is a major issue. The mayor's authority over schools, he has authority to fund schools. That is an issue. So there's some major issues. Do you see this as being part of a package with some horse trading going on?
Well, you know, I think that is the way in which it would get done, which is why it is essential that the governor get behind a strong package and insist, a strong package of ethics and campaign finance reforms, and insist that that be part of any deal. It seems that the way in which our legislature currently, unfortunately, manages to pass significant public policy is only through these massive trading deals that the press calls the big uglies. It's session after session we see this, an unwillingness to really engage with these important issues, hold hearings, have open debates, let the public know what's going on, weigh in, let the public know how their elected officials are approaching an issue. But instead, everything is resolved by the three men in a room behind closed doors as part of some ugly horse trading and deal swapping They emerge from behind closed doors, usually late at night, to announce the sweeping and historic change of one sort or another. And when we actually get a chance to look at what they have negotiated, we're always finding ways in which it does not make sense, and which, you know, there are some major problems which with what they've done. Rarely is it truly historic.
And what will you be working on between now and the end of session? I mean, what activities? I assume you're going to be spending a lot of time in Albany.
Definitely spending time in Albany, but also reaching out to our members in the different districts, asking them to write letters to the editor, asking them to call the governor, call their senators, circulate our petition, and, you know, talking to everybody that we can and trying to get this story out beyond just the politically tuned in folks who already know what's going on in Albany. But let constituents know something's rotten and the people who could clean it up are refusing to do so. They have to be held accountable.
It's really interesting because all that Dan Scarnon was asking for was a vote on his bill. And it started on the Elections Committee, and the members, the Republican members of the Elections Committee, refused to take a position on it.
They're petrified that their voters would find out that they are addicted to this money spigot.
And it's just fascinating that they're doing everything they possibly can to keep this bottled up and keep it from seeing the light of day. Because as Senator Squadron said, if it gets to the floor, if people actually have to vote on it, they probably will do the right thing in protecting democracy and make sure that, you know, their votes are seen as standing up for democracy and doing the right thing, and they would vote for it. That's the theory anyway. So it's quite fascinating, and there are 15 days left. There's time for the Senate to get this to the floor and have a real hearing on it. And I think it's just important that people understand what's happening out there. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show, the Albany Report, is to help explain what's going on, what's getting passed, and also what's not getting passed. We have also bills that have a majority of sponsors on them that don't get to the floor. And I think the reason they don't get to the floor is there's money involved in preventing them from getting to the floor. It's kind of the same scenario. It's just, you know, you can, when you control the process, you can bottle things up as much as put things through the system. And things like, you know, legislation to make sure that we're protecting our kids' health through making sure that we don't have toxic chemicals in plastics has a majority of sponsors and didn't get to the floor last year, even though it had a majority of 40 sponsors and has over 32, I believe, this year already. Sponsored by a Republican senator, doesn't get to the floor. It's not getting to the floor for a reason. When you have that many sponsors on a bill, clearly it's democracy in action. And those bills should get to the floor.
Yeah, it raises questions about how functional our legislature is. And they're not happy questions. But Cece, you know, we talk about 15 days left in the session, but that's 5 weeks, okay? That is 5 weeks in which the senators spend some part of the week back in their districts where they're out, you know, cutting ribbons, meeting with constituents, and approachable. And if we don't help to shift the story outside of Albany, then they will feel that they can get away with this for yet another session. And they've got to be held accountable. Well, it's only 15 days, but it's actually 5 weeks. That gives us time to put pressure on.
Right. So you can contact your legislator by going to the New York State Assembly or New York State Senate website and clicking on their name, and you'll get their contact information. You can go to Common Cause and learn more about the petition. But clearly, weigh in, because now is a really important time, if you are interested in this issue, to have your voice heard. That's going to be the we're going to wrap up this week's show. I want to thank you, Susan, and Common Cause for coming on the show and helping us understand what's happening. I want to thank Senator Daniel Squadron for interviewing me. And I want to thank WGXC for allowing us to have a great community radio station. So we're going to take it out with Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. And just to let the listeners know, next Monday is Memorial Day. We will not be live in the session here in the studio, but I will have a taped interview with a World War II veteran, Robert Tarpinian, and we'll be playing that on Memorial Day. So until next time, I'm Cecilia Kacik, and you've been listening to The Albany Report.